Well, thank you again, Mr. Williams, and good afternoon. You're waiting at the checkout line at the store. Only 3 of the 24 cashiers are open. There's someone ahead of you who has maybe 30 items or so that they're waiting to pay for. You glance over at the other checkouts. There are 2 people in the checkout beside you, and you eye their purchases. One has maybe 12 items in their basket, and the other has maybe 10. So you do the mental math. One person with 30 items, or 2 people with less than 25 items between them. Do I move, or do I stay? Nothing seems to be happening in the line you're standing in, but there's some activity in the next line. So you decide to bolt to the adjacent checkout line, thinking, hey, I might save myself a minute or 2 here. The line you now moved into has now stopped. There is a discrepancy over the price of an item. And you look over and see the line that you were in starts moving. You're at a bank machine waiting to withdraw some cash. The person ahead of you is fumbling through their wallet, trying to find their bank card. There's the driver's license, the health insurance card, the shopper's card, the rewards card, another shopper's club card, a gift card, another gift card, the frequent flyer card, a credit card, another credit card, a third credit card. Finally, the bank card makes its appearance. The person pulls it out of their wallet, inserts it into the bank machine. Oops, wrong way. Another attempt is made. Wrong again. A third attempt fails. Since there are only 4 ways to insert the card, a 4th attempt is successful. Then, of course, comes the PIN number. Person presses the keypad. Beep, 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 beep. It's incorrect. After thinking a few seconds, another attempt is made. Beep, 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 beep. Wrong again. After some more thinking, a third attempt at entering the PIN number is finally correct. Now the choice of which account to withdraw the money from is presented. And there's no activity for a few seconds while the person thinks about it. Person finally chooses the account. Beep. Then comes the choice of how much money to withdraw. Again, there's no activity while the person is thinking about it, trying to decide. Then without warning, the bank card is returned. Timeout has occurred. The person took too long, and now the process starts over again. Insert the card, enter the PIN, choose the account, choose the amount of money to withdraw. Finally, after what seems to be a lifetime, the transaction is completed. Then the cash goes into the wallet. The card goes back into the wallet. The receipt goes back into the wallet. And finally, it's your turn. You walk up to the machine, fumble through your wallet, trying to find your bank card. There's the driver's license, the health insurance card, and so on. In this day and age, we have instant communication. Everyone seems, has a cell phone. There's instant messaging and instant texting available. We can check our emails anywhere, anytime, from any place. If we don't check for an hour or 2, we tend to panic. It wasn't that long ago that the only way to connect to the internet was using a phone line, using a dial-up connection, the old handshake. Remember how long it took to check emails? Attachments were almost unheard of. Access to the internet was painfully slow. Now we have 3G, 3G plus, 4G connections available. Make it even faster to check our emails and go on the internet. Everything is now, now, now. Or like a friend of mine used to say, it's not now, it's right now. There was a commercial on TV a number of years ago where some people were shouting at the top of their lungs, "It's my money and I want it now." The pace of our lives has sped up dramatically over the past generation. Everything, it seems, is faster. And sometimes fast isn't fast enough. Our tolerance for things to go wrong has decreased. We become impatient when things are just too slow. Patience is an important characteristic we need to have if we are to grow spiritually. Today we'll look at both positive and negative examples of this vital characteristic. Some case studies, if you will. We'll see what we can learn from these examples. In order to have patience, we need to know what it means. What is patience? Webster's dictionary defines patience as the capacity to put up with pain, troubles, difficulties, or hardship without complaint or ill temper. Wow, that sounds impossible. Notice that again, the capacity to put up with pain, troubles, difficulties, or hardship without complaint or ill temper. Webster goes further. The ability to wait or persevere without losing heart or becoming bored. The ability to wait or persevere without losing heart or becoming bored. That seems like a lot to ask, but is it really? Well, let's find out. Perhaps one of the most famous examples of impatience relates to King Saul. Let's take a look at that example. A little bit of background on this incident. There was a garrison of Philistine forces that was about to be attacked by a group led by Saul's son Jonathan at Gilgal. Samuel left instructions for Saul in 1 Samuel 10 verse 8. Let's look at that first, because there are a few important things to notice. 1 Samuel 10 verse 8. This is Samuel speaking to Saul. 1 Samuel 10 verse 8. And you shall go down before me, that is, ahead of me, to Gilgal. And behold, I will come down to you to offer burnt offerings and to sacrifice sacrifices of peace offerings. 7 days you must wait until I come to you and show you what you shall do. So Saul was to go to Gilgal and wait for Samuel to arrive. He was to wait 7 days for Samuel until he arrived. That's an important detail. Samuel was to show Saul how to offer the sacrifices. That's another important detail. So Saul was to receive instructions on making the sacrifices. Now I'll skip ahead a few chapters to chapter 13 of 1 Samuel, verses 8 through 14. 1 Samuel 13, verse 8 through 14. Let's see what happened. 1 Samuel chapter 13, verse 8. And he, that is Saul, waited 7 days, according to the time that Samuel had appointed. But Samuel did not come to Gilgal, and the people were scattered from him. So the word used in the King James Version for waited is tarried. That word has an implication of being patient. Also note that Saul did wait the 7 days, as he was told to do so. So in that sense, he obeyed the instructions that were given to him. 1 Samuel 10, verse 8, we just read that he was wait 7 days until Samuel came. So Saul did not obey that part of the instruction. Perhaps it was a test to see what Saul would do. See what transpired next in verse 9. 1 Samuel 13, verse 9, and Saul said, bring a burnt offering to me, and peace offerings, and he offered the burnt offering. Verse 10, and it came to pass that as soon as he finished offering the burnt offering, behold, Samuel came. And Saul went out to meet him, that he might salute him. Has that ever happened to us? Have we ever just if we had only just waited a little bit longer, the outcome of whatever it was that we're waiting for would have been much different, perhaps much better. Well, that's what happened to Saul. Verse 11, and Samuel said, what have you done? And Saul said, because I saw that the people were scattered from me, and that you did not come within the days appointed, and that the Philistines gathered themselves together at Michmash. So Saul, in effect, blamed Samuel for his mistakes. Have we ever done that? Rather than take responsibility for our own actions, we look for excuses. We look for someone else to blame for our actions. And Saul continued to justify his actions in verse 12. Therefore, I said, the Philistines will come down now upon me to Gilgal, and I have not made supplication to the Lord. I forced myself, therefore, and offered a burnt offering. So Saul took it upon himself to do what he thought was best. Instead of waiting, being patient, he went ahead with the sacrifices and paid the consequences for his impatience. Verse 13, Samuel said to Saul, you have done foolishly. You have not kept the commandment of the Lord your God, which he commanded you. For now would the Lord have established your kingdom upon Israel forever. But now your kingdom shall not continue. The Lord has sought him a man after his own heart, and the Lord has commanded him to be captain over all his people, because you have not kept that which the Lord commanded you. So Saul used his own reasoning and was doing what he thought was right in his eyes, in his own eyes, when he offered those sacrifices. After all, weren't sacrifices pleasing to God? But he disobeyed the command given to him. He didn't wait until Samuel arrived. And in effect, Saul's impatience cost him his kingdom. There are some very powerful lessons that we can learn from this example. Saul was impatient. He blamed others and he blamed circumstances for his actions. He didn't take responsibility for what he had done. Perhaps Saul was being tested to see what he would do when Samuel arrived later than anticipated. Rather than waiting patiently for Samuel, Saul acted immediately, and those actions cost him dearly. That's a lesson we can learn even today. Sometimes our impatience will lead us to take action that we should otherwise not take. There might be a high price to pay for those actions. Saul's example shows that if we wait, or if he had waited, the rewards would have been much greater. Good things do come to those who wait, the old adage. Let's look at another example of patience and impatience found in the Bible. This time it's in the New Testament. Let's go over to Matthew 18, verses 21 through 35. Matthew 18, verses 21 through 35. This example shows the correlation between patience and forgiveness. Matthew 18, verse 21. It's the parable of the unforgiving servant. Then Peter said to him, Jesus, and said, Lord, how often will my brother sin against me and I forgive him? Until seven times? Peter's question was interesting on several levels. In the model prayer a few chapters earlier, Jesus taught us that we should pray that we're able to forgive those who do wrong against us, and that if we do that, God will likewise forgive us. So Peter knew that he had to forgive others. It was perhaps unclear on the concept of how often to forgive. Why did Peter choose the number 7 for the number of times to forgive others? 7, after all, is a number of completion, In those times, the rabbis taught that you only need to forgive someone three times. So Peter then thought, well, if he increased that number to seven, more than doubling what the rabbis taught, that he would find favor in Jesus' eyes. Maybe he was looking for a pat on the back. Maybe he wanted Jesus to say, that's very good, Peter. After all, forgiving someone seven times, when only three times was required, should be a good thing. But notice the answer that Peter received. Verse 22. Jesus said to him, I say not to you until seven times, but until 70 times seven. Now, if we were to take that statement literally, then you would forgive someone 490 times. 491? Well, that's different. That would, of course, require keeping track of the offenses. Now, imagine if God was like that. But the principle is to forgive indefinitely. And that takes patience. And Jesus then goes on to illustrate the point to Peter. Verse 23. Therefore, the kingdom of heaven is likened to a certain king, which would take account of his servants. So the king was to check in with his revenue collectors, as the Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown commentary states. In verse 24, when he had begun to reckon, one was brought to him who owed him 10,000 talents. 10,000 talents was a very large sum of money. Some have estimated that this debt today would amount to millions of dollars. Verse 25, but for as much as he had not to pay, that is, he had no means to pay the debt, his Lord commanded him to be sold, and his wife and children, and all that he had, and payment to be made. This was a common method of repaying debt when Jesus told the parable in those times. The family was sold into slavery in order to pay down the debt, or pay it off. Verse 26, the servant therefore fell down and worshipped him, saying, Lord, have patience with me, and I will pay you all. Then the Lord of that servant was moved with compassion and let him go and forgave him the debt. If there was an end, if this was the end of the parable, then it would have a happy ending. The king forgave the servant of the huge debt that it was owed to him. At the same time, if that was the end of the parable, the lesson would be incomplete. Jesus continued in verse 28. But the servant went out, that is, the one who was just forgiven of his multi-million-dollar debt. He went out and found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 pence. And he laid hands on him, took him by the throat, saying, pay me what you owe. Now, 100 pence has been estimated to be less than 1/1,000,000th of the 10,000 talents. So if the 10,000 talents equated to $5 million, the 100 pence, or denarii, would be about $5, less than $5. So that puts this parable into perspective. Here, the debtor was forgiven of a debt of, say it was $5 million, and he in turn went out to find someone who owed him less than $5. Verse 29, his fellow servant fell down at his feet and besought him, saying, have patience with me, and I will pay you all. Phrase sounds familiar. We just read that in verse 26. But verse 30, and he would not, but went and put him into prison until he should pay the debt. So again, that was a typical way of dealing with those who owed money back in those days. Owing someone else money was taken very seriously. The family of the debtor could be enslaved or sold in order to pay the debt. The debtor could be imprisoned himself in order to pay the debt. Notice the first servant was forgiven a very large sum of money. He in turn went out and sought someone who owed him a very insignificant amount of money. Verse 31, so when his fellow servants saw what was done, they were very sorry and came and told to their Lord all that was done. In spite of what we might think, our actions are noticed by others. The actions of the one whose debt was forgiven were noticed by the others, and they went to the king and let him know what they had seen. Verse 32, then his Lord, after he called him, said to him, O you wicked servant, I forgave you all that debt because you desired or beseeched or pled with me. Should you not also have compassion on your fellow servant, even as I had pity or compassion on you? This is a perfect illustration of the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have them do to you. Verse 34, and his Lord was angry, even incensed, and delivered him to the torturers until he should pay all that was due to him. Verse 35, so likewise shall my heavenly Father do also unto you, if you from your hearts do not forgive every one his brother their trespasses. So basically, what goes around comes around. What can we learn from this parable? Well, there are spiritual lessons and physical lessons to be learned. The one who was forgiven the very large debt turned around and did not forgive the one who owed him a very small amount by comparison. And because of this action, the one who owed the large debt was then forced to pay it back. Even after he'd been forgiven of that debt. The king in this parable is a reference to God. Now, God doesn't forgive us only three times, as the rabbis taught, or only seven times, as Peter thought, or even 490 times. God has patience with us. He forgives us indefinitely as long as we seek his forgiveness and we repent of our sins. This parable shows the magnitude of God's forgiveness and his patience with us. It also shows the correlation between patience and forgiveness. Patience of and by itself is a good thing, but it works better when it's combined with other Christian traits. It's not a standalone characteristic. God forgives us and is patient with us, but we must show those same traits to others. The parable shows that God does not keep a running total of our offenses to others, and in turn to him. God has patience with us, and we need to show patience to others accordingly. So in the two examples we've looked at so far, we saw different aspects of patience. We saw the need for patience in one another, and we saw God's patience with us. What about our patience with God? That might seem like an odd question to ask. What about our patience with God? When we're going through a trial or difficulty, we naturally want it to end quickly. But when it doesn't, when it seems to go on for a long period of time, do we become impatient with God? A third example of patience involves Joseph. This is a classic example of what is written in 1 Peter 2, verse 20, where it states, for what glory is it if when we are buffeted or punished for our faults, that we should take it patiently? But if, when you do well and suffer for it, and take it patiently, this is acceptable with God. In other words, what's the problem if we do something wrong and are punished for it? That would be the normal course of action. But what if we do something right, or at least didn't do anything wrong, and are seemingly punished for it? God will also see how we handle that type of situation. If we handle that correctly, then God is pleased with us. But it's not easy. The natural human reaction is to defend ourselves and perhaps justify our actions, just like Saul did. But notice how Joseph handled a situation that arose when he was serving Pharaoh. In Genesis 39, verse 2, it is noted that Joseph was prosperous, and he was in the house of his master, the Pharaoh. Verses 3 and 4 of Genesis 39 reiterate that Joseph found favor in Pharaoh's sight. and that he was over his master's house and all his affairs. In verse 5, it's pointed out that his master also prospered because of Joseph's dedication to his true master, God. And verse 6 shows that the master trusted Joseph implicitly, and that Joseph had built up a relationship of trust with his master. That took time, patience, in other words. But the results were well worth the effort. Then something happened in Genesis 39, verse 7. Let's pick up the story at that point. Genesis chapter 39, verse 7. So Joseph was being blessed. And Pharaoh was being blessed because of Joseph's obedience to God, true master. Genesis 39, beginning in verse 7. And it came to pass after these things, that his master's wife cast her eyes on Joseph, and she said, "Lie with me." But he refused, and said to his master's wife, "Behold, my master doesn't worry what is with me in the house, and he has committed all that he has to my hand. There is no one greater in this house than me. Neither has he kept back anything from me but you, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" Joseph knew that he was in charge, what he was in charge of, and what he was not in charge of. He knew the difference between obedience to God and disobedience to God. And he knew that if he gave in to this situation, that he would be disobeying God. But the situation did not go away, as verse 10 points out. Verse 11, Joseph found himself in an awkward position. Genesis 39, verse 11, "And it came to pass about this time that Joseph went into the house to do his business, and there was none of, there were none of the men of the house there within." So he was alone. "And she caught him by his garment, saying, 'Lie with me.' And he left his garment in her hand and got himself out." So the opportunity to entrap Joseph presented itself. The wife of Pharaoh, Joseph's master, sees the chance for revenge against Joseph. With his robe in her hand, she called for others in the house and showed them the evidence, quote unquote, that Joseph had tried to hurt her. She claimed she was a victim of Joseph's advances. In verse 19, it is noted that Pharaoh became angry with Joseph. And in verse 20, Joseph's life changed. Verse 20, Genesis 39. "And Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were bound. And he was there in the prison." Now, Joseph was framed. He was set up. In spite of doing nothing wrong or improper or illegal or immoral, nonetheless, he found himself in prison. In fact, on the surface, it appears that Joseph's obedience to God put him in prison. Now, further study will reveal that was not the case. But there was, however, a purpose for all this, as we'll see later. Notice what happened next in verse 21. But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners that were in the prison. And whatever they did there, he was the doer of it. The keeper of the prison didn't look to anything that was under his hand, because the Lord was with him. The Eternal was with him, and that which he did, the Eternal made it to prosper. So in spite of being falsely accused and imprisoned, Joseph showed an attitude that pleased God. And accordingly, God blessed Joseph. He was entrusted to look after the other prisoners. Just like in verse 3, Joseph prospered even while imprisoned. His imprisonment continued in Genesis chapter 40, verse 1. All the while, there's no indication that Joseph complained. His patience in this matter gave him peace And Joseph knew God was looking after him. And he found comfort in that knowledge. As the story of Joseph's imprisonment continued to unfold, others close to the Pharaoh had offended him. Chief butler and his chief baker. And soon Joseph found himself with some new cellmates, as it were. Verse 4, Genesis 40. Genesis 40, verse 4. And the captain of the guard charged Joseph with them, and he served them. And they continued a period of time in prison. So Joseph's incarceration, he was put in charge of the prisoners. The chief butler and the chief baker, who were in prison with Joseph, then each had a dream that they told to Joseph. And the rest of Genesis 40 tells the story. After being released from prison in verse 21, the butler did not remember Joseph, as it states in verse 23. Joseph probably had his hopes raised and then suffered disappointment once again. Joseph was left in prison, where he waited patiently for his eventual release. 2 years later, the Pharaoh had a dream, but no one could interpret it. In Genesis 41, verse 9, the chief butler, who was formerly in prison, remembered that Joseph told him what his dream meant. So finally, after all this time, Joseph was freed from prison and restored to a position of power once again. Genesis 41, verse 40. Genesis 41, verse 40. You will be over my house, and according to your word shall all my people be ruled. Only in the throne will I be greater than you. So Joseph was 30 years old by this time. What can we learn from this part of Joseph's life? It seemed unfair for him to be put in prison for something that he did not do. Yet, he took it patiently. And we must realize that God had a greater plan for Joseph. Joseph's imprisonment was part of that plan. He was imprisoned in order to create an environment in which Joseph could gain the trust and confidence of the Pharaoh. And that took time and patience. One thing we have to remember is that sometimes we have to go through trials and hardships to reach God's final outcome. Joseph exemplified that through his patience. He allowed God to work things out for him. And that's exactly what happened. Joseph's example of patience has many lessons for us. God never left or forgot Joseph. He was working things out according to his plan. Sometimes those plans take longer, but we must remember that God is in charge. When we're going through a trial, we would do well to remember the words in Romans 5, verses 3 to 5. Romans chapter 5, verses 3 through 5. Romans chapter 5. If these words were written in Joseph's time, I'm sure that he would think on these things a lot. He would have thought on them. Romans 5, verse 3. Romans chapter 5, verse 3. And not only so, but we glory in trials also, knowing that trial works patience, and patience experience, and experience hope. And hope makes not ashamed, because the love of God is shed abroad in our hearts by the Holy Spirit, which is given to us. So we can see the kind of a process there. Knowing that trial works patience. Patience, experience. Experience, hope. And hope makes not ashamed. So Joseph exemplified those words. During his trial, he grew in patience. And that led to his experience. Experience that stood him well while serving the ruler of the land of Egypt. His experience led him to have hope, both physical and spiritual. Joseph was not ashamed to allow God to work with him and through him. We only looked at part of Joseph's life, and there are many lessons that we can learn. Joseph exemplified patience during his imprisonment. Remember the definition of patience given earlier. Webster's defines patience as the capacity to put up with pain, troubles, difficulties, or hardship without complaint or ill temper. Webster's goes further, the ability to wait or persevere without losing heart or becoming bored. That description describes Joseph. James 5, verse 7 shows us one of the reasons patience is so important. James chapter 5, verse 7. James 5, verse 7. Be patient, therefore, brethren, unto the coming of the Lord. Behold, the farmer waits for the precious fruit of the earth, and has long patience for it, until he receives the early and latter rain. So the farmer doesn't plant seeds, and then instantly there's a crop. It takes time for the seeds to germinate, grow, and finally to mature, and be ready for harvest. Patience is like that too. It takes time for patience to grow and to mature. Hopefully we don't have the attitude of trying to grow in patience, but it takes too long. Good things do come to those who wait. Patience is another attribute that we must have. It takes time and effort to develop patience. Remember that patience is the capacity to put up with pain, troubles, difficulties or hardship without complaint or ill temper. It means the ability to wait or persevere without losing heart or becoming bored. So today we saw how Saul paid a large price for his impatience. And we too can pay a large price for our impatience. We looked at the correlation between patience and forgiveness in the example of the debtor who owed millions of dollars. Joseph displayed patience during his imprisonment after the false accusations were laid against him. And there are many other examples in the Bible that we can look at. There are many lessons that we can learn from those examples. At the same time, there are many examples of impatience in the Bible, and we can also learn from those examples. So the next time we're waiting in the checkout line or waiting at the bank machine, let's remember the meaning of patience and remember these three examples, these three case studies that we looked at today.